You're all set.
Okay, we'll call the work session order at 5:15. Okay. So, Al, why don't you get the Calmore and the LED buyout?
So LED buyout, or National Grid light, street lighting buyout. Bob and I have been working with National Grid for a few months trying to get that buyout cost reduced. We have not gotten the formal net book value buyout letter yet. We should be receiving it any day. So I don't know if you want to, Resolution A, because we don't have that buyout letter, if you want to, not Resolution A, Resolution... H.
Alamore?
Oh, because no, there's a, we don't have the formal letter?
Sorry. To authorize supervisor sign all documents relevant to the purchase. Because we haven't gotten the formal letter yet, if you wanted to table F, that would be okay. I would almost say we should do that.
Okay.
Yep. So we anticipated getting it by day, but we haven't received it. We got a number that is $41,000 less. At this point in time, National Grid isn't going to move any further than what they have. So it's time that we pull the trigger, authorize the supervisor to sign out the purchase agreement for the streetlight buyout, and get this in front of the Public Service Commission so that we can close on the sale of the streetlights.
Yeah, and when it originally, when Al and I originally started talking about it, we looked at some things and he pointed out some stuff to me, and we both agreed that we should try and negotiate with him. Well, Al had probably a dozen calls. I had a half a dozen calls with where we had National Grid on there, and we worked them hard, and we did save $41,000. So I think that's.
National Grid, that's a good deal.
Yeah, that's what we thought.
Yeah, I mean, I still think we're probably paying too much for old infrastructure, but at the same time, they own it. They are, they hold all the cards, essentially.
And that came from the Public Services Commission as well.
Yeah, Public Service Commission said that they hold all the cards, and they don't get involved with negotiations, period. As long as National Grid follows the policy that National Grid wrote and the Public Service Commission accepted, it is what it is. So they've reviewed what National Grid came up with for a net book value and said that it complies with the policy that's been accepted by the Public Service Commission.
And so what are the two different, what was our hope for price and what is left?
I think that we're probably overpaying by in a six-figure range, even from where we are now. But at the same time, we're paying, $20,000 a month in maintenance fees. So at some point in time, we got to...
The longer we go, the more money.
The more money they're making off.
Well, not only that, we don't have any other recourse.
Yeah, at this point in time,
already got them to come down $41,000, which, like we were talking, that usually doesn't happen. And so at some point, you got to say, all right, they did bend a little bit. $41,000 to them is nothing. $41,000 to us is substantial. It's a 4% decrease. So I think that at this point, we really don't have any other alternative. What's your option?
I don't disagree. I just want to know what the numbers were. You had
original buyout. I got it right here. The original buyout number was $995,494.
All right.
The new number is going to be $954,028.
And it could go lower.
It won't go higher. They said there's a chance that we'll get a further reduction at closing, just because the infrastructure will be a little bit older. But,
right, so their original number to us was 995.
Yep.
You did a spread, not a spreadsheet, but a cost comparison between doing, you assumed a number a year ago, or maybe 8 months ago, didn't you? What we were going to
do. Because that was the $995,000 number. Yeah.
All right.
That's the buyout. And then on top of that, you have the LED retrofit portion of the project. So the actual total project cost is 1.85 million and change.
But it's approximately 40,000
less
than
now.
It was when we started this process.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
That's
good. And that was back in November. So it's a plus. It's time to move on. Let's.
Is there any reason, not that we can't wait, but is there any reason why we can't vote on this condition upon?
Receiving the final, but you could do that. You could.
Receiving the final budget based upon the number that you just talked about. If it's different, we don't sign it.
I mean, obviously, so if we use that 954,028.
Yep.
And we vote on that. And if it's lower, that's great, but if it's higher, we'd have to do another resolution.
Yeah. Yeah, we could handle it that way.
I don't know if it makes a big difference, but I don't know if 2 weeks.
Yeah, the goal is to get this in front of the Public Service Commission before their close of second quarter meeting, which is at the end of June.
So probably the sooner the better.
Yeah.
So if we use that number and we vote on that today, if the number comes in and for some freakish reason it was higher, then I won't sign it. We won't move forward with it. When I get the letter, if it's lower, then we're good, and then I'll update, you know, I'll let you know. But if you're good with that, we'll use this number for now. And then if it's lower, that's great. If it's higher, then we'll have to do another resolution.
And what's the variable in why it might be higher? Who's?
I don't think it is going to be higher. They've given me a verbal that's what the number is going to be.
Yeah, it won't be higher.
Why don't we just use the 995 number, and if it comes in lower, then we're good. So that way we don't have to. Maybe what happens if it comes in?
Well, they already gave us.
Yeah, they already they have already told us what the number is going to be. They're waiting for the net book value buyout letter to get reviewed and approved by the National Grid attorney before we get it.
Yeah, they don't do the attorneys don't do the numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we got the numbers from the number people. They're just he must be looking for the language, right?
I'm sure that's what it amounts to. Should just be an update of the last one we did, but. Yeah. You know, I think with all big corporations, their corporate attorneys review everything before it goes out.
If you're good with that, then I'll put that number right in here right now.
Or lower, right? Just so that we do have
not to exceed, not to exceed 954,028.
The amount.
Okay. Good. Collington Point Drainage District, which is Tallamore, is included in. Here's a letter describing what we're doing. Essentially, in the rear yards of these two properties, there's what appears to be what was an old drainage swale that was used to drain the agricultural. The agricultural field that was there. With the new development, that swale isn't functioning as it was before, so we got an area of some standing water. The homeowners contacted me just because their backyards are soggy and they've got an area that's really just standing water, that's an old swale. The homeowners want to fix the problem. But they need a place to send the water. The only place to send the water is to the catch basin out front in the street. So what I'm proposing is we take a 10-foot side yard easement from both properties. The homeowners have agreed to have their contractor install the infrastructure that would be installed in the easement, which would include a 6-inch drain tile from the catch basin at the street to one of the plastic yard drain boxes in the backyard that we use on a regular basis for these projects. And the drainage district will only be responsible for paying for the materials, and I would inspect the work prior to being backfilled. The homeowners will be tying in several drainage connections to that line for their sump pumps, roof leaders, just trying to dry out the property. I mean, it's pretty soggy back there. I won't say sink to your ankles deep, but you're gonna get wet feet if you walk back there.
So the drainage district is the $1,200 is on the drainage
district. Correct. Okay. Yep.
is this going to be any, you know, is our highway department doing any work around here? Is there, I know in some cases if they're doing digging or something, is this an area where, you know, we may end up having to dig up for something and if we have to replace something, they're going to come back to the town and say that we're responsible for fixing it?
Well, we already have some responsibility because they're in a drainage district and we've got an area of standing water that isn't draining that affects multiple households. So we already have some responsibility to find a way to drain that area. So we already have some liability. The fact that they're willing to have their contractor install this is really just a savings to the drainage district overall initially up front. And then as far as long-term maintenance, we will install a solid pipe, not a perforated pipe, so that if the highway, if anything ever happens and it's clogged, the highway department could pull up with their jet truck at the catch basin at the street, jet to the catch basin out back and clear the pipe. And any time in the near future, being plastic pipe, this thing ever failing, I just don't see it happening. It meets our requirement from the drainage district maintenance standpoint and really saves us some money. This is similar to the one we did, I think you were on the board. It might have been when you recently first came on.
And that's why I was trying to remember, because I remember.
We did one over in Crane's Watch. Trying to think of the two properties that it was. But essentially, we had a long drain pipe that didn't have any inlets in it. And these two homes had standing water in their backyards because we didn't have any inlets in. We paid for the yard drains. Their contractor installed the yard drains. We paid for them and provided the stone. And then their contractor tied into the yard drains so that they could dry out the property.
I appreciate you explaining it. I was trying to remember.
It was Crane's Watch. Gavin was the guy's first name, and I can't remember his last name. And then there was another homeowner that was affected by it, too.
So do you remember, like, precedent? And that's what I was just asking about.
Oh, we do this stuff all the time. Okay. The Radisson Drainage District Improvement Projects that we do every year are all the same type of thing. This is just an added bonus that the homeowners are willing to have their contractor install it so that they have a place to send the water from the rest of their yard.
And it's normal for us to replace it if something were to happen.
Yep, okay. Absolutely. And that would be a drainage district cost, not a general fund cost.
It's going to be an increase in improvement to the existing district.
Correct.
So only one more question from me, Al, and that is just the way the motion reads to authorize the expenditure of up to $1,200 for materials, etc. It's assumed that $1,200 is coming out of the drainage district. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I see what you're saying. $1,200 for materials from the, okay, so we can modify that to say from the Collington Point Drainage District.
What letter is that?
H. So expenditure up to about $1,200 from the Collington Point Drainage District.
Hey, can I just go back to the LED thing again?
Sure.
So I understand everything we just said in terms of our relationship with National Grid. What about the cost of the LED fixtures? So could that ever muck things up, or do we have a guarantee?
We have a contract. We have a signed contract.
Okay.
That locks in the price.
Okay, good.
Thanks, Al, for clarifying all that.
No problem.
The highway part-time clerk position. This is the position that we spoke about with the highway superintendent a couple of meetings ago, where he wanted to hire a part-time person to fill in for his current clerk when she's on leave. So there's no additional cost, and you know, the budget stays the same. All that he would do is hire this person, and when his current clerk is not there, the other clerk would come in and take over the responsibilities, utilizing the same amount of additional time or money. Actually, it'd be less money because her salary, the rate of pay for the new clerk would be $15.50, and the clerk now makes more than that. So,
would he be interested in cross training? So, if we want to put more money aside, so the new person can work with the existing clerk to get a little bit more of a hands-on, more knowledge. In that
with process. What clerks?
When working with the existing.
Yeah, they're going to do. Yeah, she's going to have to be trained.
Yeah,
yeah.
I just want to make sure that, you know, he wants to have a work with the existing clerk for a while.
No, we already talked about that. She's going to. There's okay. going to be a time where the clerk now is going to train the new clerk. There's some overlap, but it still won't. When I talked to the highway superintendent, I told him that he still had to stay within that his budget limitations, even for the training. So he understands that.
Okay.
And what was the vetting process for? Like, how did we find the person?
He did interviews.
Okay.
So he can appoint whomever he wants. So he did interviews, and he came up with this person that he wanted as his clerk.
Okay. So, you know, I understand completely why this is a good thing to do, but I just want to make sure I understand why it would not cost any more. If the regular highway clerk is out on leave, that person is collecting something, right? Sick leave?
No, they're part-time.
Oh, so that person would just take off?
Yes, unpaid time off.
Oh, unpaid time off. Okay. Got it.
So the only thing I'm going to add to this is $15.50 is more than the part-time clerks in this building makes. That are experienced, have been here for a while. If we're going to bring in somebody brand new, I don't think they should start at a rate of pay over what the existing people we already have in this building are making.
The rate of pay isn't on here.
Yeah, Bob just said 15.
Yeah, he gave it to me at $15.50.
I think Paul Rufo, who's been in the assessor's office, who handles some pretty sensitive stuff, I think he makes $14.50 an hour, right around there.
So where did we get the $15.50 from?
From the highway superintendent. And that's his budget.
Do we know where he came up with that number from?
I think Al makes a good point. Is it an arbitrary choice to say $15.50? It must have come from somewhere. And it's too bad that these titles don't have numbers attached to them. And maybe that's something we should think about doing for the future.
He can only appoint one. He can appoint one secretary. So I guess he can establish with our okay any. Salary for her he wants within, you know, if we okay. He's using her as a clerk. I mean, we can table this, he's not here, you know, so if you want to wait and then have the discussion when he's here, we can do that. Because I don't want to speak for him, because I don't know how he came up with that number. I know that, you know, we had the discussion, and I did ask him, you know, what are you going to pay her? And he said, well, I'm going to pay her this because, I think I did say, what are the other clerks making? And his explanation was, well, she has to do more than the other clerks. So I don't know what that means.
Let's table it and have him give a presentation for it. I support tabling.
Well, I think the issue is bigger. I hate to mug this up, but you know, when you hire a full-time person or a part-time person, you know, Bob, you worked in that environment. There's a title, there's a salary.
I don't think, I think in a few months we won't have to worry about that.
Why, what are you going to do?
No, we're going to have to, negotiate with a new union. So that's probably going to be something that we can negotiate. I'm certainly not going to do that now. But that's a fair point. You know, we can table it.
It might be a good idea.
You know, I'm not advocating one way or the other. I'm only telling you what the highway superintendent was asking.
I mean, because I could say, well, why didn't you make it 1650, or why didn't you make it 1478? I mean, so, you know, there should not be an arbitrariness to this. This should be, it's a new, you know, it's a, this is the title, this is what we pay to start. That's it.
Well, and there's an assumption made that this clerk has to do more than that clerk has to do more than that clerk.
Right.
I don't know.
Well,
do it more than
I think that once we establish another, there's going to be another union established, and once we establish that, all of these titles will have those designations, so that if somebody comes in, like Bob said, you know, when you work for when we work for the county, you come in as a clerk one. This is what the starting pay is, and probationary time, and everything else. So, yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, we can have those discussions.
Yeah. Okay, is tabled.
Yep. Tabled. Last week, it's not on here, but we have some time. So last week, I asked you to take a look and start thinking about the parks. So the every Thursday, the town supervisors throughout the county have a conference call, and today that the parks were a big issue, and whether they're going to open them, you know, if they do open them, you know, what do you have to do to keep them open, what are the liability, and they brought up a lot of issues with it. You know, I mean, with the CDC, you have to clean, you know, somebody uses an area, a picnic area or something, you have to come in, you have to disinfect the whole thing. If they're using bathrooms, you have to disinfect them every hour. If they're using playgrounds, same thing, any hard surfaces. And in some of the discussions that they've had with their attorneys, and feel free to jump in anytime you like, them, they were talking. There's liability issues there for us. I mean, with people always looking to sue entities with deep pockets, it could open up liabilities for municipalities if someone were to claim that they came down with something. So they're actually going to start looking to see what the guidance is from the county and from the CDC and the Department of Health. But I think most municipalities are leaning towards not opening up their water parks, pools, beaches, playgrounds for the next year. So the president of the associations of towns is going to contact the county executive, and I believe that they're going to try and get him on a conference call with us next week to talk about this. And I think that for us, we wouldn't want to, and here's the problem for us. I think in this instance, collectively, we should, as far as towns, we should probably do the same thing, because we could be overrun with people. If we're the only town open with a park anywhere and on weekends, I mean, where are they going to go? Well, they're going to go where the parks are open. So I think that whatever decision is made, I think we should collectively make it with towns and go along, you know, with whatever they're thinking about doing. Because most of them are canceling their park programs, because how do you keep social distancing with these, you know, if you got kids in there, how do you do that? And a lot of the facilities, we have some programs that have 50 people. I don't know too many of the buildings that we have that can hold 50 people, minimum of 6 feet apart, especially if you have kids. I mean, there were a lot of issues they brought up, and I'm just, you know, giving the highlights with them.
So where do we stand right now? Is our park open?
No, because none of the parks are open.
Well, throughout the county parks are open.
They're playgrounds and things. Our park is open.
Okay.
but not the playground area. None of the pavilions.
Just the walking trails.
The walking trails are open, but none of the basketball courts, the tennis courts, none of them, and neither are any of the county parks.
No, I agree. No, yeah. Right. But,
no, the parks are open. Yeah.
You can walk the trails.
Yeah. And we got that open. I mean, people want to walk their dogs. They want to walk the trails and things. And we did have a problem with people practicing on the soccer fields right at the height of the thing. You know, I was driving by with my wife, and I said, man, that looks like they had a practice out there, a soccer practice. I said, this guy carrying a bunch of balls. So I said to Tony Birkinshaw, I said, Tony, could you keep an eye on that? So it was in the next day. Sure enough, that's what they were doing. They had practice with a bunch of kids and no mask, no nothing, right at the height of this thing. And he went in and he told him, hey, you know, the fields are closed. So, you know, we can't rely on people to do the right thing sometimes. But in fact, they want us to put signage up. That's what they got in the parks. You know, all these areas are closed. So as we get moving on, if it looks like we're going to be closed for an extended period of time, we certainly have to put up signage. You know, none of these areas are open, but, you know, certainly they can use the open space. You know, they're out there playing frisbee. I mean, come on. They're out there playing catch with a crossbar. Okay. But, you know, organized games where you're
bouncing. Yeah, I was going to say, if somebody is practicing kicking goals into the soccer net.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, I mean.
Two siblings.
I think
you
got to be reasonable.
That's fine. When you get a hold.
If you can go out, you know, half a dozen kids are playing catch with a ball and, you know, they're 30 feet, 50 feet away from each other, come on.
Yeah.
You know, they got to do something. But, you know, the basketball hoops, we had to take them down. And, you know, but as we, and I was talking to Tony about, okay, if they do modify this a little bit, they're saying you can be outside in the sun and it kills the bacteria and stuff, maybe we can open up the tennis courts for, like, playing, you know, singles. You know, only two people out there at a time or something like that, or, you know, I mean, we'll try to modify it, but I don't know how you get around
contact with the ball. You know, the whole somebody touches their nose, touches the ball before they serve.
Yeah, so we'll have to think about it. I mean, this is something that we're going to have to think about. But just so you know, it looks like all the other towns are looking to cancel and close their parks for their parks program for the summer.
So I have a question for Tony. So if we put. Does signage protect us from a liability issue? Putting a sign up saying the soccer fields are closed, and then a group comes in and something happens, does that sign protect us or does it not?
Well, I mean, there's already a directive out there that the parks are closed. So putting up a sign is not going to eliminate our liability any more than it would otherwise. So the sign, you know, it's nice to let people know that it's closed, but people are supposed to know that it's closed anyway by virtue of all the other information.
Yeah, but
this question came up.
But it does not protect us in any way.
You'll never be able to prove that you got it at the park if you're there. Never.
It wouldn't protect you. Lawsuits like that depend on your negligence, okay? Not putting up a sign, in my opinion, is not negligence. If you did something that actively caused the problem, that's negligence.
Okay.
So you're never going to be able to prevent a lawsuit because they can sue you for whatever
they
want.
Right.
So just to say, well, we had a sign up, so we're not responsible. Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe you did something else. You know, it depends on what the lawsuit is. Or, you know, what the allegations are, I should say.
Right.
We had a similar issue came up with it in the lawyers' online stuff for the state just today, as a matter of fact. And the consensus was that we really can't do anything town-wide or village-wide or whatever without direction from the state health department and you know, the higher-ups. That's where it's coming from. We can't decide, for example, in the town of Lysander or town of wherever, well, they can do it this way. It's got to come from the state because the state is the one that's directing it to begin with.
You can be more restrictive, though, right?
You can be more restrictive than the state, but you can't be less. So everybody's saying, we got to wait and see what the Department of Health tells us.
And that's essentially what, you know, we were discussing today.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we wanted the county executive to get on, to get some guides from the CDC and the Department of Health. Yeah, that's, maybe I wasn't clear, but
no, that's
that's, you know, the direction that we're going.
But just to be clear, because what you said was a little, we're all saying, correct me if I'm wrong, the park is open, but what is not open are certain specific things within the park, like the tennis courts.
There are no facilities in the park that are open. The basketball courts are taken down. We got the soccer field is closed. We have
pavilions are
snow
closed.
Fence around the pavilion, snow fence around the, anything that we could secure, we secure.
All right, so you're saying the soccer field is closed. I thought you said before that if a couple of kids just were hitting a ball around, that would be okay. Because I sort of agree with that. You know?
Well, I'm not saying now. Like Tony said, I think moving forward, that's what I think, but I'm going to wait to see what they say. Well, if they say you shouldn't be doing that, then, okay, well, then like Tony said, we're probably not going to be able to do it. I mean, if CDC guidance says they should be staying out of there and you're not going to be able to regulate kids throwing the ball around, it doesn't matter what Bob Wicks thinks. It's what the CDC and the Department of Health say that should drive us.
I hope what we hear, though, is, you know, organized sports are not going to be, which means you can't use the soccer field for an organized game of soccer. But it's an open space, no different from another piece of lawn. And I would hope we hear, the individual use of open space is okay. People practice social distancing. You've been trained for 6 weeks to learn how to do it. So whether it's the soccer field or the outfield and the baseball field, what's the difference, right?
And I'm agreeing you in theory, but we might be told that isn't something that we should be allowed. If the CDC and the Department of Health says you shouldn't allow it because of A, B, C, and D, I think that's something that we're going to have to take into consideration. Right, Tony?
Yep.
We're going to have to follow that. It doesn't matter what we think right now.
This will happen when? When are we going to?
Well, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to try and get a hold of, well, they're starting to get things. The attorneys are starting to talk about it, so they're going to have to make their decisions fairly soon. But I'm almost positive that none of the water parks or the pools are going to be open. That I'm just about positive about that. Now, the other spots, that's why Damian Ulitowski, who's president of the town associations of towns locally, is going to try and get the county executive on, so we can run some of these questions by them and get some guidance from the Department of Health and see where we're going to move forward. See what they're going to do too. So I don't think we got to, you know, we can't open them up yet anyway. But it's just something that you know, I think that moving forward, regardless of what we think, I think collectively, as a countywide group of towns, I think we, in this instance, I think we ought to kind of do the same thing.
Yeah, we have no choice.
Can I ask a quick question regarding the agenda item?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So looking at agenda item I, are we thinking about holding future town board meetings via Zoom, or what's the thought?
That's I'll let you go ahead with that.
So actually there's an adjustment on that. We do not need to go to the business subscription. We can drop down to the pro subscription, and it'll meet our needs, is what I've determined, which is $14.99 a month. So we know that, at least from a planning board standpoint, we have at least three public hearings that we're going to have in the near future. Because we don't know what the requirements are going to be, and, you know, quite honestly, it's highly unlikely that anytime soon the governor says that we can have open public meetings and you know, you could put 40, 50 people in this room. We need to find a way to accommodate that public hearing requirement. So from the planning board perspective, that's going to be our trial run next week, Thursday, having a Zoom virtual planning board meeting. We don't have any public hearings on that agenda, but we'll allow people to call into it and
witness it and observe it, but, you know, everybody will be on mute other than the planning board members, Karen and myself, during the actual meeting.
And the Board of Assessment Review has to stream it live and have the opportunity for people to comment, like through call-in. They have to. That's part of the executive order that came out. So we have to have it for that. Frankly, a lot of the other towns are already doing this, and I agree with Al that this is something we're going to need moving forward. It's not a huge expense. I mean, we're going to have to buy some cameras for our, like I need a camera for my computer. It didn't come with it, and they had Zoom meetings today. I had to be on the phone, so.
And we should kind of do it. I mean, if that goes well, we should hold our meetings like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the
town board meetings.
Buren did theirs on Monday, so they streamed it on Facebook Live, and they're just learning the Zoom thing too. So they did it via, they had a Zoom call in set up. The board meetings did go there into the town hall and stream it on Facebook Live, but their next meeting, their intent is to do the full virtual meeting with nobody coming to town hall and everybody using the Zoom application.
Work out the kinks.
Yeah, you know, that's what the Monday was their trial run, practice run with it. My understanding is that, you know, they obviously, it's new technology. You got to learn the technology and you know, you got to work the kinks out of it, practice a little bit. Kind of why our next planning board meeting next week, Thursday, is a good chance to do it, because we don't have any public hearings. Hopefully we can, you know, make it work without any hiccups, you know. I don't see these restrictions going away anytime in the near future, unfortunately. The one question that I haven't gotten answered that I know Dina is concerned with Zoom is if we can slow the audio down so when she does the transcription of the meetings, it's easier.
There's one version of Zoom that will transcribe to.
Yes. The business one is an add-on. It's expensive.
Okay.
It's expensive. I can't remember what, but if you go with a business subscription.
Because there's a government one as well, too.
See, now nobody's given me any information.
So I contacted them the other day.
So you got all...
I put in a request to be contacted by them.
Yep.
And obviously no one's called me yet.
So. Yeah, I got an email response. I responded back to the email about government pricing.
Yeah.
Supposedly there's government pricing available, according to the Office of General Services, New York State Office of General Services. How you get it...
Yeah, so if someone calls me next day or two.
Yeah. If you can get somebody that'll say yay or nay, great.
Yeah.
But
I'm not, yeah. I don't want to hold this up by any means.
So far we're there, I will say their customer service so far from what I've seen is
well, yeah. I mean, they went from 80 a month to 8,000 a month at their accounts.
Yeah. They're customer services.
I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think that's what it amounts to. But this is going to be the new normal, unfortunately, for a while.
Okay. Can we talk about item E?
Item what?
E. That is it, right?
Yep.
E, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, E.
Yep. So, I talked to Bob earlier today about that. I mean, I guess this goes way back. I don't recall ever hearing about this as a town board member from 2014 on. So, it's not a criticism, it's just, you know, where this come from. And it would be, and it's, you know, just it finally surfaced, obviously, because some attorneys, you know, put their act together. So we're going to end up paying whatever it is, $7,226. So my question to us is, looking through this, it says it doesn't apply to the last 2 years because it's a new owner. So what, it's a different owner, 2018-19, 2019-20. So this, I'm confused about what we're paying a back taxes for and what is going to happen with respect to the new owners. Am I making sense in that question?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that Tony and I were discussing it earlier, that there's new owners there, so it's been reassessed. So the reassessment amount is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tony, reassessment about on the new property. They reassessed it, they came up with an amount on the new property because they sold a lot of the properties off. So this Sedgwick, I don't even think owns it. Do they call it?
It's a screwy process.
Yeah.
It's like a sold piece
of
it. Yeah,
piecemeal it.
Yeah.
But they've been going through this for years, and the school district was really the one that was taking a big hit on this thing. And that's why Bonchenek and King, the attorney for Bonchenek and King, was doing it. And we were just paying a portion. So we were paying a smaller portion than them. And in talking with Tony, the Bonchenek and King attorney, with Teresa, everyone, right there at that room, everyone agreed that moving forward, this would be a good deal for us. Specifically because it gets this taken care of. And when I talked with the bond attorney, he said that, what are you going to do, litigate it? And now our costs go up exponentially.
Yeah, I wasn't concerned. I think it's a fair, from what I can, just my cursory review, this it seems fair. My question is, on page 3 of the background material, it says that 2018-19 is not included, it's a different owner. So are we going to have to refund taxes for that calendar year as well as 2019-20, which, so those are 2 years. So it's not included in the settlement because we're not paying Sedgwick. But I don't know, but if we reassessed it, that means whoever paid the taxes for those last 2 years, including this one, paid a higher amount.
I'm not sure that the new owners ever agreed for taxes.
But if we reassessed it, Tony, at a lower, to Bob's point, and the new assessment is $125,000, and I don't know what it is, that means we overcharged them. And I'm just thinking we're going to end up having to pay another refund for the last 2 years. I don't have a problem with it.
We don't have to do a refund unless they agree.
Well, we go with the assessment, Tony.
So?
So you can lower an assessment, which means you charge someone higher than you would. I don't know.
If you lower the assessment, how could you charge them higher?
No, I think that's where I just figured it out. So, Bob, I think what you're misunderstanding is. So when the new owner purchased the property, because it sold for less than the assessed value, the assessor lowered the assessment, so they haven't been paying. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tony, but I believe that's the way I understood it, was that when the property changed hands, the property sold for a lower value, and the assessment was lowered accordingly.
Right. So Sedgwick wasn't involved in that, and the new property owners are not involved in the settlement.
And I did. You have more information than I do, but when I talked to Teresa Golden, she did say it was reassessed. So, like to your point, Alan, she probably from the point on 1890, it was probably reassessed, and the new owners were paying at whatever rate it's reassessed at. Because what she said is most of the property's been sold off.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, it still seems a little blurry to me, so I guess I would like to get a statement, if you don't mind, Bob, asking Teresa to send us a note to the town board saying what was the tax situation with respect to this property, not with respect to the old owner for 2018-19, 2019-20. It just would be nice to know that it's all, what we did from 2018 on is done, it's fixed.
I think the answer is it's done and fixed and it wasn't grieved. So the order is handled.
Well, with this, I believe the resolution
it says it authorizes a supervisor to sign a resolution authorizing the settlement regarding the Sedgwick property's proceedings. So we still would have time. I mean, that's just saying we're going to agree to the settlement with Sedgwick Properties. The new owner is in Sedgwick Properties, right, Tony?
Right.
So, I mean, we can get that for you, but we can still vote on this tonight, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, I'm totally.
Let's no, we can. No, no, no. We can get that information. I thought you wanted to.
No. Let's get the. Okay. This will settle everything. Is the way I'm reading this through 2018. If Al is correct, Teresa Golden already reassessed the property in 2008 for the 2018-19-19-20 tax. I don't know that.
That's my interpretation of that.
I would like to hear Teresa tell us that.
Yeah. Well, she did tell me. Yeah, she did tell me she reassessed it, but I don't know when and where's, but how about if I have her call? I mean, I could.
That would be great. It's not a question of grieving, Tony. It's a question of if we didn't reassess it and the taxes were paid based on an incorrect assessment, that's not fair to those new owners. So I don't care about grieving, I care about fairness. So I just, but if Teresa reassessed it, you know, for some reason at the end of 2018, even before this thing was done 2 years later, which is now, I'm confused. So yeah, let's hear. Yeah, I think you should all be interested in this.
Well, when she talked to me, she did. I mean, there was a lot going on with this, but she did tell me that the assessments on the property, and I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember exactly. The assessments on the property are now all taken care of. It was reassessed. Now I can't tell you when or where. You know, I mean, she'll have to give you that.
All right, that would be great.
Well, we're good with this one.
Yeah,
absolutely. Settle on that. Anything else?
So just real quick on the these are great, these intermunicipals. So that's a long term thing we do it every 3 years, the intermunicipal wastewater servitor.
Yeah.
The cooperative license to public safety, we do that every 5 years.
That's a renewal.
Yep. And the C1, that's the new thing that we're basically dealing with in terms of sharing personnel and equipment, right?
Yes. That's the one that Tony wrote up with.
I think that's great.
That goes along with the highway that, you know, we had to have. Yep.
And is D something that's been in place?
Yeah, this is something new.
This is new, but it's only.
I was going to say, I think that's been in place for 7 years.
Which one is that?
D?
D, I think has been on place for a while, and it's a renewal.
What's your services?
Yeah.
This is the code enforcement?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
She didn't tell me that, but I mean, it's pretty innocuous. All it says is that it lays out the criteria if for some reason we need to, our codes personnel is off, that we can utilize either the villages or the town of Van Buren's codes officer at their rate of pay, and we would accept the liability while they were here, just like they were our own employee. And the same thing.
It's a good thing.
I mean, yeah, us, if the village needed somebody or the town needed somebody, and they wanted to utilize our personnel, then they would pay their rate of pay, and they would assume all the liability. You read this, right, Tom?
Yeah.
And I didn't see anything in there that, I mean, it looked.
No, there's nothing wrong.
I do believe we have this on the books already. I don't know if it's ever been used, but I think it's been on the books for a while.
This didn't say renewal, and so, I mean, it could be, because I actually called up the village clerk, and because there was a typo in here, and it said this agreement on the blank day of April 2000. So he called her up. I said, did you mean 2020? You know, so I said, or does this go back to 2000? And she meant 2020, but.
I kind of remember this coming about shortly after Tim Woolsey was hired.
I vaguely remember it too.
I think it was shortly after we hired Tim that this came about.
Oh, yeah?
Right around that same time period.
Well, I mean.
So this could very well just be a renewal.
Yeah, and there's nothing.
Nothing wrong.
There's nothing in here. I mean, it doesn't hurt anybody, and then you can either utilize it or not utilize it. You know, all we're doing is saying that if they wanted to utilize our personnel, we wanted to use one of their personnel, they laid out the criteria of, you know, the cost and the liability and everything else.
And then finally, we're not doing any voting on anything, but this water district, we got some material on.
We've done a bunch of these, but this is a little different in that it's not a developer per se. There's two vacant parcels that front Route 31 that a gentleman bought. He's proposing to construct two houses on them. He wants public water supply. The village won't allow new users that are outside of the village, it's a town parcel, not a village parcel, to have village water service without.
Is that the one I made you tonight?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize it was.
So I sent an email reply to Dina when we.
I see.
Okay,
yeah.
You guys got it? Yeah. So there's a series of steps. It's Article 12 in New York State Town Law explains it. But essentially, the town board will pass a resolution authorizing my office to prepare a map plan and report. After that, the town board will accept the map plan and report and set a public hearing. Once the public hearing is completed, the town board can pass a resolution that formally forms the district.
So what does that do in terms of allowing, or not allowing, but getting the village of Baldwinsville to supply them water?
Once they have a district, the village of Baldwinsville will allow them to tap into the.
Yeah, but I think, be careful with the wording, because we're not creating a district. We're doing an increase in improvement to an existing district.
No, there's no district there.
So I just asked you before. I said, is it an increase in improvement to an existing district?
Oh, no. This is a completely new district.
Okay.
I misunderstand. Yeah, this is a completely, we have no water district in that area along Route 31 east of the village. Yeah, we have.
So it said those properties that just border the village.
Correct.
Right.
Right next to the doctor's office.
Yes.
There.
Yes. Right there. So this district will just be two.
Just to be two
parcels in one district.
Correct.
So what is it technically that the village will allow the district?
They have. I think the bigger part of it is they don't have recourse to, if people don't pay their water bill and they're a town resident. Because the village can't put a fee on their tax bill if they're not a village resident. If they don't pay their water bill, the village doesn't have any recourse other than to shut the water off. I think that's a big part.
It is regular law, which makes sense, is for that purpose.
That's a big part of it,
protects
yes.
The village, gives them a layer of protection they would not have.
Correct.
It doesn't. For us, it makes no difference one way or the
other. None whatsoever.
Is there any cost associated with it on our?
All costs would be borne by the applicant.
Yeah.
Are you good to go, or you want to take a couple minutes, or can we start on me?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're not voting on this tonight, right?
No. This is just
recorder, please.